I'm Alana Roche.
And I'm Dr. Lauren Costine. And welcome to The Consciousness Salon.
The Consciousness Salon is a conversation where psychologist Dr. Lauren partners with Alana Roche, the boundary boss, and community activists to raise individual and collective consciousness through enlivening conversations about psychological and social justice issues.
We will be discussing topics ranging from gaslighting and triggers to identity issues and internalized phobias, and why looking at the world and ourselves from a psychological lens improves mood, increases our sense of self, meaning, life purpose, and so much more.
Welcome, everyone, to the Consciousness Salon. We are back. How are you doing, Dr. Lauren?
Really good and super excited to be here, as always.
Yes, you look fabulous.
Thank you. So do you.
Thank you. I really love your background. Loving the orchids.
I love orchids. I know, me too.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite flowers. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's nice to have some nature around you, right?
Yeah.
Just a little bit during getting through this pandemic still.
Can you believe it?
We're so still time inside. I mean, I'm sure a lot of folks have been, you know, been able to return, but I know.
Yeah, it's just such a trip. I mean, obviously here in LA County, and I'm actually appreciative of it, we still have to wear masks so many places, you know, unless you're outside or home.
That's the density. We really, it's the only option.
Yeah, I'm grateful for it because of the protection that it, science has shown over and over again, it does give us.
It helps.
But it's also like, oh my God, I'm still wearing a mask. Like, I can't believe I'm still wearing a mask. Like,
yeah. I mean, compared to other countries and how they've handled this pandemic, you know, it's rough. But at the same rate, you know, we are getting there. But we've never lived through a pandemic before.
No, it's a trip.
So I think just because this is new to our life experience, we don't really have anything to measure it against other than other countries and how they've been navigating it. And obviously, and I think countries that are small like New Zealand,
and they're on an island too.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that really help them get.
But
to the
on the
line.
Other hand, like I speak to folks in Australia and they've been on lockdown almost the entire time and they're going a little crazy, where we've kind of opened up. And while it's got all these other issues, there's this freedom that's happened as well. And people are figuring out how to go about their daily life. So there's like pros and cons of each approach, I think.
Yeah, always. Always. Yeah.
Holding the dual perspective, right? Holding
this. That's what we love to do.
Yeah, I think it's so important because the either or thinking, it's not really.
It's harmful.
It's harmful. It's dangerous, harmful, and it's not accurate. It's never holding all the components.
Never. That's why since this pandemic, I've never preached at all about the right and wrongs of all the things because. I mean, we're all guinea pigs in this process. So I'm just here to do my piece. I'm going to do what I need to do to get through it. And I wish everyone else the same, right?
Right. I know. Yeah. Getting
the resources and the support to make their way through all of this.
And continue to, you know, figure out what can you learn and what are you learning about yourself and what you want out of your life and, you know, those opportunities.
The reflection piece.
Yeah. The reflection piece has been so important.
Yeah. I think that's been absolutely transformative for a great deal of people who really took that opportunity to pause. So,
yeah.
It was, and I know we talked about that in previous episodes, but I don't want to get too far off into that conversation. I just, you know, wanted to hold space for the fact that we're still here.
We're still here.
We're still in it. We're still doing what we can to remain sane and do the self-care practices and still be able to bring you another episode.
Yeah.
So today we are going to share a little bit about Dr. Lauren's journey. She's been on quite a journey this summer, and we found it really inspiring, and hoping with her share of her journey that it will inspire all of you who are listening, and just consider it as an offering, and maybe something you would be interested in exploring as well.
Yeah, if it feels right.
Yeah, if they feel called to it.
Yeah.
And that's what this show's about, right?
Just right.
Exploring, sharing a little bit about our journeys and seeing if that's something that helps them as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well said, really well said. So I'll just jump in.
Yeah, jump in.
You know, and I'm going to kind of give some context, because I think past episodes I have touched on this, but I'm going to get more deeply into the weeds and sort of some concepts and some takeaways and things as of something that started back around January 2020. I've always been on a sort of spiritual path of Buddhism, like some more Eastern philosophies. Like I was very drawn to those at an early age. I had young sort of spiritual experiences that I didn't know what was happening because I did not grow up in that kind of an environment at all. I grew up in a very Gnostic environment. So I was having these experiences, sort of really profound ones, and didn't understand what was going on, but I knew it made me feel different than others around me. And then when I was 18, I was introduced to sort of these Eastern philosophies, and it was a very profound aha moment where I was like, okay, I've finally found something that makes sense to me. Let me continue on this journey. But, you know, also figuring my life out and having experiences was equally, if not more important at many, many times. And then I've had my own, you know, things to overcome addictions, then, you know, going back to school, getting licensed as a clinical psychologist, a lot of it, building my career, building my experiences as a psychologist, doing a lot of my own inner healing, you know, would take a lot of precedence or time away, becoming this big activist, stuff like that. So, but in January 2020, the calling came again very strongly. Like, it's time, you know, I'm in my 50s now, and something happens in the 50s. It's really interesting. There's like this understanding, this real recognition of like, yeah, I'm definitely not going to be here forever. I still have time, but I don't have as much time as I used to have. And for me, that's been really sort of like, wow, okay, what can I do to utilize this time? So I made a pledge to go back to, you know, sort of create space and time for this part of my life that had been squeezed out from so many other obligations that I was getting into. Then the pandemic hits, and it's like, you know, wow, I really have space. Like, let's really make room for this. So I started this spiritual book club with a group of friends, and we read a bunch of books, and I was really listening to a lot of Eckhart Tolle. I appreciated his sort of modern, you know, approach that's like agnostic in a way. It's not, you know, doesn't have any sort of particular religious theme. He sort of integrates them all. And started kind of getting into this place of presence and awareness, and which has this incredible stillness and peace to it. And sort of having those experiences more and more. And I was like, yeah, I want more of this. This is what I want more of. And when I first was introduced to it, it was like enlightenment was kind of the word. And Westerners can go a little nutty with that word. It's like, what does that mean? Oh, well, you know, as an addict, I thought, oh, well, it means you're in constant bliss. Like, let's go for that, right? But there was always this like, I never quite got, when I was studying Buddhism all those years, what it really meant. And then I felt like really listening to Eckhart, I got a better idea of what it means. It's not some sort of like, well, for him, his experience was amazing, but it's not this like, you're in constant bliss. It's actually being in the present moment all the time, like for the most part, you know, and really being sort of connected and in this still aware place that doesn't have a personality or isn't ruled by the personality, right? So it's sort of like, in a way, kind of behind the personality if you need a sort of a location. It's sort of like when you step back out of the me, there's like this place of stillness, non-duality, sort of oneness and everything. So I was doing all of these different experiments and experiences, sort of like spending a lot of time doing it, having some incredible experiences with different teachers around the world. And then I, because, you know, everyone started going on Zoom. And so I could work with someone in Wales and someone, I mean, all over the world, right? So I started doing that and having these amazing experiences. Then I reconnected with an old dear friend of mine that I have a really deep connection with. And she introduced me to this book called The Finders. And it's by someone named Dr. Jeffrey Martin. So he is a white cisgender, I think straight, I don't know actually his orientation, American man, right? I think he's roughly around my generation. He has a PhD in psychology and transpersonal psychology, extremely bright and a real researcher. Like, so I was truly fascinated because he's back in 2006, he started a research project with a team that started finding people, and he calls them the finders, who have landed in this place of peace and happiness and contentment persistently. And he started just studying them all over the world and trying to figure out how they got, just gathering data about, you know, these people, how they got there, what it's like. And, you know, so we're talking 15 years ago, about 10 years did this research. And it's all in the book. So it's called The Finders. And then they really sort of started to gather the information and break it down and try to understand it. And so that they could explain it to all of us, right? And it's just remarkable. I mean, it's just remarkable. So what he takes is ideas that have really only been taught by certain sort of spiritual teachers, right? A lot in Eastern philosophies, but also in Western Christian philosophies and Judaism and things, of how you can get to this place of incredible peace and well-being. And they call it persistent fundamental well-being. And usually taught by folks that landed there themselves and then are trying to help other folks get there as well. Eckhart Tolle is a great example of that. Like, he landed in this place actually in a very dramatic way, which turns out to be very unusual. But he did, and then he became a teacher because people would be around him going like, you seem really different. Like, you have this peace, you have this calmness. Like, I want that. You know, I think he kind of radiated in a way. And he does teach it very, very well, but it's always from their sort of experience or from their teacher's experience, or, you know, there's a lot of teachers that come out of traditions in India, you know, in the non-dualism sort of Hindu yoga world, and they'll teach that kind of tradition, and they'll teach what they know, but that doesn't end up working for everyone. So Jeffrey was able to break it down into Western mentality. So those of us here that were raised in the Western world, you know, predominantly, we have a particular kind of mindset. It's a Western mindset. It's just the conditioning that we have. So he breaks it down in a language that really is more understandable to the Western mind, in a sense.
Could you share a little bit about what the Western mind looks like? I know we touched on it in previous episodes, but for those who may not have heard those episodes, just briefly, what would be some elements?
Well, we're very goal oriented. And there's sort of a linear logistical way we like to look at things, like break it down to me and help me understand this and then show me like A, B, and C of how to get there. And then once I get to C, then I want to know D, E, and F, and then break that down for me. And then, you know, and it's sort of this like, you know, we love the emails that say 5 ways to reach this goal, right? And then you break down the 5 ways.
That's exactly what came to mind when you talked that we're talking about it. I'm like, we are obsessed with kind of bullet points and concise content.
Exactly.
So, okay, yeah. So continue.
And so he does that, right? So they, and so, and there's no spiritual language in it. It's extremely secular, so it can reach anybody. So if someone's interested in this, but they're not interested in any sort of spiritual paradigm, this can totally explain it to you without that. They use words like persistent fundamental well-being. They use words like the narrative self. What do I mean by the narrative self? I mean, I highly recommend everyone reading this book, but the narrative self is that part of ourselves that talks to ourselves all day. Right? So that's that part inside that's chattering away and sort of commenting. It's funny when you really think about it, commenting on everything for you.
Right. It could be the commenter or the critic, you know.
Oh, and the problem solver.
Yep.
Right. So he breaks this all down in this kind of language that's very, very understandable. I'm going to kind of probably butcher some of this, but he really talks about, and I really love this. It's actually funny. This narrative self that he's talking about, this part inside of us that talks all day long, that is very critical of others and ourselves, of the outside world, that's got an opinion on everything. It's a problem solver. It's always trying to figure things out. It's the one that wakes you up in the morning and starts going, okay, what's the day? What's this day about? Like, let me figure this day out. Or say you have a problem going on that's really triggered you. That's the one that's going to be obsessively thinking about it. And so this narrative self really, for most of us, is not very helpful, not very nice, not very, and he uses this incredible example of like, imagine you get on an elevator with someone and they start talking to you the way that your narrative self talks to you. Oh my God, you know, yeah, you deserve that piece of cake last night, but now you're feeling fat and you blew it. And how stupid were you? Why'd you eat that cake? You know better, blah, blah. You know, like, if there was an actual person next to you talking to you like that, would you stay in the elevator with them? You'd be like, get away from me, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. I love that example of putting like actually putting that voice into human form.
Right. It's like you would say, you're a nutcase, get away from me. Like, you know, I don't want to be near you.
Well, isn't that why our mental health, like some of it could be so insidious?
Yes.
And because it's going on in the background, whether or not we're conscious of it.
And the thing that's really important is most of us think that's who we are.
Right.
We think that voice is who we are.
Right.
You know, and a big part of doing like psychological trauma work is you can find out that's just one voice of many. And it's not who I am. And then if you follow this sort of goal of persistent fundamental well-being, you really can also get an idea that this is not who we are. It's a part. Okay. It has a function and it came out of...
Is that associated with the lizard brain?
Yes, exactly. It came out of when the world wasn't that safe. Now, I'm not saying the world is really safe for everybody. That's not at all what I mean, but a lot of folks today are not always running for their life kind of a thing, right?
Or more or less, we're not, you know, we're not in the cave people stages of our existence.
Right. Which was an extremely long period of time, and the brain and the neuronal pathways developed in such a way to keep us alive at that time. And it was for so many, like hundreds of thousands of years, as far as they know at this point, that we have all inherited that brain that's like, you know, and so you can have something that feels unsafe emotionally in your life, and that our brain sees it as life-threatening. The tiger is in the bushes and it's right. coming to get you, right?
Right.
And like, I got to run, or I got to, you know, you get into your different responses, however you're wired. Then we grow up in these worlds of deep conditioning, you know, and it's necessary because children don't really know how to, you know, do things in certain ways. And so there's a lot of conditioning that is required to happen so that we can come out and be functional adults. But that, and the other part that's really fascinating is this narrative self, this problem solver, this one that talks to us all day, it gets little dopamine hits when we're solving problems.
Oh, that is really interesting.
So
that's really, really interesting because there's certain people I know in their personalities, they talk about some of the favorite aspects of their work is the problem solving piece.
Exactly.
That I never understood that.
It's fascinating.
Oh, biochemistry.
Right, right. So say you have a problem in your life. Let's use, for instance, like it's a relationship issue going on, whatever it is. Your brain is going to think about it over and over and over again, regardless of whether that is useful or not.
Oh,
because
I've done that.
Yeah.
Guilty.
It's like, it's trying to figure it out. It's wanting to be smart. It's wanting to be helpful, but then it's doing the same. It's just repetition, and it's actually not useful or helpful, but it's also getting dopamine hits. So it's really hard to stop dopamine.
Wow, that's really, really.
So this fundamental well-being is when one transitions to that, there is a sense of things are perfectly okay as they are. There's a shift in the nervous system that no longer feels like it's in constant danger. And it feels like deep down, everything's just okay the way it is. And so the thing about how people who are not in this state are living most of the time is in a kind of state of agitation, or things are not okay, or I'm not okay, or this job isn't okay, or my relationship isn't okay, or something. And even when you go after and fix them, or for instance, a vacation, right? A vacation can be wonderful. It can really be incredible. You come back a week later, the effects of that vacation are gone. Because that part of us, it's not okay, comes back even when we solve something. Say you get that job you always wanted. Some unease will come back eventually. Say you get that house you wanted, that car you wanted, that relationship. And Buddhism talks a lot about this. Eventually the unease is going to come back. The part of you that's saying, okay, what's next? What do I have to fix next? What do I have to, you know? And it never comes. I mean, that's really what I think was so helpful and revolutionary was you can fix every part of your life and get it to these goals. And once you realize that's not going to create that sustainable inner happiness or okayness,
peace,
then it's just always going to be the other way. So this, finder.
I mean, we are conditioned though, sorry to interrupt, but like we are conditioned to seek outside of ourselves.
Absolutely.
Right. So that first and foremost, that is a very dominant aspect of our culture, or at least our American culture, I should say.
Very dominant.
And that is also on purpose because of capitalism and consumerism.
Exactly.
Like, they need us to continue to seek outside of ourselves.
Bingo.
In order
to
literally directly impact the economy.
Right.
So, you know, hence all the shopaholics and all of us with our coffee and all the hits that we get from all of those things.
And looking at anything on social media and saying, well, I don't have that, or I need that, or I need to fix that, or I need to get whatever that is.
True. That's all of it. And, you know, once we make the shift away from that, recognizing it, speaking to your part of the journey here, where you are at peace. And I do wonder, though, it's kind of like, what is it called? Maslow's.
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's so interesting you bring him up because Jeffrey talks a lot about him in the book.
Okay. I bring him up because if your basic needs are not being met, I don't know. I'm sure there's some folks who can still achieve peace, right? But I would imagine that it could be that much harder.
Oh, 100%.
When you wake up and you don't know where you're going to sleep, and you don't know where you're going to eat, and you don't know where, and you don't know where, and you don't know all the don't knows, I can't imagine being in that position and being able to find inner peace.
Well, I think that's why his triangle has been so pivotal in understanding, you know, you need those things really taken care of to then be able to go, especially we just need it to be able to go for this next level.
For the next level, right.
And there's so,
period.
Right. So,
unless you're Buddha or Gandhi and can actually fast and you can fast for a long extent of time and just meditate. You know what I mean? Like there's certain.
But even like Buddha and Gandhi who could do that. And Buddha didn't do it. Buddha was really into the middle way. He tried the fasting and it didn't lead to enlightenment. So then he went to this other way. But like Gandhi was surrounded by people when he was doing that so that he didn't die. Like he had his
support.
He had so much support, love and support.
So I appreciate you bringing that into this conversation as well, because I think sometimes there's a misunderstanding around these enlightened leaders in our history. And again, bringing this back to present day, if folks who have their basic needs met, who have a roof over their head, they have... and they're not living paycheck to paycheck, where they're not constantly in trying to figure out how they're going to, you know, earn a living next week or next month.
Or buy food.
Or buy food, et cetera. You know, I can imagine that the shift to get there is more accessible. The question is, at what point do people stop and realize that pattern and habit of going outside of themselves to find peace is a lie?
I think what I've noticed is he says in his data, it's all ages, it's all races, it's all genders. He doesn't mention sexual orientation, but he said it's all socioeconomic lines. That's what he said in his his data research. But what I've noticed is I think this will become or does become more important to folks as they get older. And you have a lot of experiences of, well, that vacation didn't work as I wanted to. That relationship didn't work. Neither did the career. Neither did the house or the money or the whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like I get start that. Recognizing.
You see patterns.
Yeah, and this is not listening. this is not leading me to anything persistent.
Right. My marriage didn't work, blah, blah, blah. I thought this was going to work. Yeah.
Or so my marriage is good, but I'm not persistently feeling okay.
That part.
Right? Like, oh, yes. I did accomplish a good relationship. I made that happen.
Right.
But, oh my gosh.
But why do I still feel like...
today.
Right. Ooh, so juicy.
Yeah. Right?
So juicy. And I think more people relate to this than they want to admit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's, you know, it's interesting. There's a video of Jung. It's very obviously a long time ago. He lived a long time ago, but it's black and white video. And he's talking about specifically the United States being extremely extroverted. Like the United States is going to have a harder time doing the inner work because it's like super extroverted collective society.
Wow.
But I think we're actually, this pandemic has really shifted a sense of like, okay, I've got to go. For many folks, I got to go.
It's made
inwards.
Us pivot.
Yeah. I gotta go inwards and figure out like the job isn't
purpose?
Doing it. You know, like the reflective piece, right?
Yeah.
So it turns out, so I read this book and then my friend, you know, I've been having these incredible experiences, but my friend's like, I think you should take this course. So Jeffrey has turned all his data into number of courses and he keeps improving them. Mm-hmm. And then he made his course. Initially, it was expensive, and then he made it much more affordable. Okay. And I took the course starting in June.
Okay.
And it was 90 days. And what he does is it's mostly experiential. You end up trying all kinds of different meditation exercises to find out which ones work with your system. And then there's a number of other things you do, and it's about an hour a day. So it's a big commitment. And after about a month and a half, I would say 45 days in, things started to happen big time. Like it got really juicy. And I started popping into, again, I was having these really big, extraordinary, blissful experiences, which me as an addict wants to always be like that, but it doesn't, that doesn't, they're transitory, but they're lovely.
I've noticed that. I agree with you. Like as someone who has recovered from codependency and has spent quite a chunk of their life in love addicted dynamics, you know, I have definitely found moments where I'm like, I am content. And I'm also like, wow, is this what grounded, trusted, loving connection is, right? Where you're at peace, you know the person, there's no drama, there's no question. It's unquestionable. So I just find that so funny because I've spoken to other folks who have gone through the SLA program or have recovered from codependency, et cetera, and have been in these similar dynamics and they're married now and everything. And they're like, yeah, it's cool. And I just think we're all like, yeah, we know it's healthy, and healthy relationships aren't always, you know, sunbursts and fireworks and all the things. Like
no,
they're just not. And that needs to be called into the space, like as a real part of the reality, like it's okay.
And coming to terms with that acceptance and just understanding that that's part of life. It's just helpful.
It's just helpful to have that to just be reminded, because I know media has given us such a different portrayal of what it should look like. And the truth is it's inaccurate.
It's inaccurate.
And it's misleading, and it's super misleading. So if you find yourself in a healthy dynamic and you're wondering, why do I feel kind of bored? It's okay. It's okay. Please refrain from immediately running out and finding somebody who's going, you know, that's think, I guess what I want to make sure I'm I say this clearly, before you run out and try to seek somebody because you think you need to be like on cloud nine, just stop. Just stop yourself in that moment. You know, phone a friend, call your sponsor.
Well, and if you are actually doing it, then there's more work to be done.
Absolutely.
Right. Because that's just acting out and
acting out
an addictive behavior that's destructive.
Yes, 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 yeah. Yes. But I just thought I'd throw that in there.
I love it. It's perfect.
The peace, right. Choosing to not embrace that peace or, you know, that contentment, that's the choice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So,
final thoughts, Dr. Lauren?
Well, I just think that, like, this has been such an extraordinary journey, you know, and I'm so beyond grateful for it. And I've been experiencing gratitude in a way that I never experienced before. Like, there's this, like, this visceral, full body experience of gratitude. And just a sense of everything's okay all the time, even if Mercury in retrograde is creating havoc. Like, yes, that's annoying, or yes, that meant that day was kind of sucked, but like, okay.
Like, right.
It's not. So, but the thing is, like, getting to this place, which is amazing, doesn't mean that there isn't a lot of deconditioning that needs to continue to happen. There's sort of a 2-year and a 7-year process. And deep traumas can really kick you out. Some people call it, like, it feels like it's suppressed down and it's harder to access. I always say I feel like I've been popped out because I'm still definitely triggered by certain situations in my life. But what I found through this really deep work is my space and access to what's really going on has expanded tremendously. And the insights are really deep and very effective and very helpful and very process oriented, not about the content, but about what parts of me are wounded and still need some healing, you know, and then having access, and the intergenerational trauma that we started talking about, that we'll continue to talk about, that work has been extremely helpful as well, because energetically I've been doing other people's work in my family that I don't need to do, and like sort of stopping to do that, you know,
that part. Yes.
And that really unconscious kind of codependency, you yep. know, of like, oh, I'll do it for you. Oh, I'm an empath and I care yeah. about you and I love you, so I'll do it. Give it to me.
Yes.
This is all unconscious, but it's like, yes. And then you're like burdened by this stuff that's not yours.
Yes.
So it's been a really fascinating, powerful, incredible journey experience. I've met really amazing people all over the country through this course. I just want to offer it to, you know, our listeners as an option. It's really great to work with folks as a clinician who are also on this journey, because you still need to do the psychological component, because you're still a human being navigating this experience until
exactly
you're, you know, until you're not here anymore.
Exactly.
And so
can you tell us the name of the website or the name of the program or the course, any information?
Yeah. So it's called the Next Level Challenge.
Okay.
And it's, the book is called The Finders. We'll have it all in our
yes.
Underneath.
But for those who are just listening, sometimes right. it's helpful.
The book is The Finders by Dr. Jeffrey Martin. And the course is The Next Level Challenge. It's 90 days. It starts at the beginning of each month. And they start a new cohort. You'll meet the most amazing people. It is predominantly white dominant at this point and male dominant as far as the teachers go. So there's a feedback that we were able to give, and I went, you know, I still have the
access. This isn't going to cut it.
I said, that's a, you know, please bring some awareness to this, you know?
You're like, gee, cisgender straight white men are the predominant leaders in this world.
Again.
Because they have all their fucking needs met.
That's right.
Language.
Including back in the day, their food made for them.
They have transgenerational wealth, possibly. Who knows? Maybe not. But bottom line is that they are fully supported because they are centered in this world.
Yes. And they are, for the most part, they were not also getting all the job and career opportunities, but then they weren't making their meals and worrying about the grocery store and cleaning the house and whatever. Like, they could just go to the job.
Must be nice.
Yeah. So,
well, on that note.
So, but the point is, like, I just like to point that out. But that shouldn't keep anyone from doing it, because we need diversity in there, you know?
No, I'm glad you spoke up. It's absolutely. And, you know, people will be called to it regardless. If they're being called to it, they're being called to it, right? Yeah. If that is a barrier for them, you know, the type of not seeing themselves reflected in the leaders, and there's that as well. And that's okay.
Yeah. And that's okay. And I hope as time continues that there's more reflecting of our
on their part. I mean, they're so content. They're not actually looking at what they're doing in their blind spots. Anyway, that's just me being critical. That's my critical inner voice.
It's okay. No, that's why I appreciated that I had the opportunity to give the feedback.
Absolutely.
Know they're reading it. I do know they read it. So,
fantastic.
But they are so content, and there is a procrastination that starts to happen, and it's hard to get things done because
they're moving at a slower pace. They're so grounded.
And it's not like getting that project done. You don't have that need to accomplish stuff like you used to.
Amazing. And you know what? On the alternative, for folks who are people of color who are listening, there's this amazing woman who started this movement years ago called NAP Ministry. I'm sure I've mentioned it before in this podcast, but her whole objective is to get people of color, specifically Black folks, to rest, to realize that their purpose on this planet is not to be productive and not to generate and not to produce. We are not machines. We are humans, and it is your time to reclaim it and to reclaim your energy and take care of yourself. So, you know, there is ways to slow down and get settled. And there's plenty of resources out there to support you in case this is not your cup of tea. You know, feel free to reach out to us, and I'm happy to share other alternative resources for those who are BIPOC. But in the end, the objective is to decondition yourself from being the machine that we were all told to be.
Absolutely. And find deep contentment within yourself that's not dependent on anything, but your inner resources being content.
That's it. That's beautiful. I love it. Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Lauren, for sharing your story with us. And I'm really happy for you. I'm really glad that you gave this to yourself this summer, this opportunity to go within and really commit to yourself in this way. I know you've shared little stories on the side about beauty that's come out of the gifts that have come from it. And I look forward to seeing how it continues to unfold in your life.
Me too. Thank you so much, Alama, for sharing yourself today and being a part of this conversation. It was really beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in and listening. We will make sure to include all these lovely resources in the link. And I hope you're all well. Take care of yourself. Until next time.
Okay. Big love. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
The Consciousness Salon is owned, operated, and produced by Alana Roche and Dr. Lauren. Music is produced by DJ Roche and edited by Tyler Hood.
We would love to hear from you, and there are a number of ways to contact us. My website is www.drlaurencostine.com. That is drlaurencostine.com.
And I also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram page.
You can reach me at www.theboundaryboss.com. That is the BOUNDARYBOSS.com. And The Boundary Boss is on both Instagram and Twitter.
This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Lauren Costine and Alana Roche and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical or mental health questions. Thank you.